Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Standardizing Empire, the U.S. Military, Korea, and the Origins of Military-Industrial Capitalism by Patrick Chung is a scholarly work of history examining how U.S. military power helped shape post-war capitalism through Korea. Rather than treating the Korean War only as a geopolitical conflict, Chung analyzes it as a formative moment in the development of military procurement, overseas basing, infrastructure building, and industrial standardization. The book argues that the U.S. military became a major organizer of production and consumption, influencing goods such as pipes and clothing, as well as services such as transport and construction. Its central concept, military-industrial capitalism, describes an economic order built around military demand, contractual discipline, technical standards, and globalized supply networks through Korean and U.S. contexts, including the rise of firms such as Hanjin, POSCO, and Hyundai. The book links Cold War militarization to South Korea's industrial growth and to broader transformations in the world economy. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the Korean War as a foundation for permanent military economic infrastructure. Chung treats the Korean War not simply as a battlefield event, but as a turning point in the organization of the global economy. The war coincided with the expansion of permanent U.S. overseas deployments and a growing network of bases, depots, ports, roads, and logistical systems. These installations required continuous flows of materials, labor, maintenance, construction, and transport. In this framework, military presence became an economic institution rather than a temporary wartime expense. Korea offered a crucial site where the U.S. military learned to sustain large-scale operations through local and transnational contractors. That mattered because the infrastructure built for war did not disappear when major combat ended. It supported recurring military needs and helped connect Korean producers, service providers, and workers to U.S. procurement systems. The book, therefore, shifts attention from diplomacy and strategy to the material systems that made empire durable. Its argument is that military power spread not only through treaties and bases, but through everyday economic routines that reorganize production around the demands of permanent readiness. Secondly, military standardization turned procurement rules into global production norms. A central contribution of the book is its focus on standardization. Chung shows that U.S. military contracts did more than purchase supplies. They imposed specifications, inspection procedures, delivery schedules, accounting rules, and performance expectations. These practices shaped how firms produced ordinary goods and services, from construction materials to uniforms and transportation. Standardization mattered because it converted military needs into repeatable commercial routines. A contractor that learned to satisfy U.S. military requirements also learned systems of measurement, documentation, quality control, and cost discipline that could be used in wider markets. This helps explain how military demand could influence civilian capitalism without directly controlling every factory. The standards embedded in contracts created incentives for firms to reorganize equipment, management, and labor around efficiency and compliance. In Chung's account, empire operated through administrative forms as much as through coercive force. The U.S. military did not simply consume products made by existing markets. It helped define the terms under which markets produced, priced, shipped, and evaluated those products. Thirdly, from supply lines to supply chains in the rise of logistics capitalism, the book emphasizes the transformation from military supply lines to commercial supply chains. This distinction is important because supply lines are usually associated with war support, while supply chains describe the integrated global movement of goods in modern capitalism. Chung connects the two by examining how military logistics created opportunities for firms that could move cargo, manage routes, coordinate labor, and reduce costs across long distances. Hanjin is especially significant in this context because its growth illustrates how a company tied to military transport could become part of a broader global logistics order. The point is not only that wartime contracts generated revenue, more importantly, military logistics trained firms to operate at scale, respond to centralized planning, and serve transnational customers. These practices later aligned with the needs of containerized trade and export-oriented growth. Chung's analysis complicates the idea that globalization emerged mainly from private market innovation. It shows that techniques associated with global commerce were shaped by the operational demands of Cold War militarization. Fourthly, South Korea's industrial rise through militarized contracting and corporate formation. Standardizing empire links South Korea's post-war industrial development to the institutional presence of the U.S. military. Chung does not reduce South Korea's economic growth to foreign intervention alone, but he highlights how military contracts, infrastructure, and procurement relationships created pathways for Korean firms to acquire experience, capital, technical discipline, and international connections. The case studies of Hanjin, POSCO, and Hyundai show different dimensions of this process: logistics, steel production, and manufacturing. These firms became major players in South Korean development, but the book stresses that their early growth was connected to a Cold War environment structured by military need. This challenges purely national developmental narratives that focus only on state planning, entrepreneurship, or export strategy. It also complicates celebratory accounts of the South Korean economic miracle by locating part of its foundation in basing, war preparation, and unequal military-economic relations. The broader implication is that industrialization in the U.S. led Cold War order was not separate from empire. It developed through networks of contracts, standards, and security imperatives. Lastly, military-industrial capitalism reshaped labor and weakened older industrial centers. Chung's concept of military-industrial capitalism also has important implications for labor history. Military contracting rewarded low costs, reliable output, and disciplined production. In practice, this often favored firms and labor systems that could provide inexpensive and politically manageable workforces. The book, therefore, links military procurement to the spread of labor practices that later became associated with global outsourcing pressure on wages, weak unions, flexible subcontracting, and production outside established U.S. industrial centers. This does not mean that the U.S. military single-handedly caused deindustrialization, but Chung argues that its contracting practices helped normalize a model of production in which efficiency depended on shifting work to lower-cost environments. That model benefited some Korean firms, while contributing to the erosion of U.S. industrial dominance. The book is valuable because it connects two developments often studied separately: South Korea's industrial ascent and the relative decline of U.S. manufacturing power. By placing labor at the center of military logistics and procurement, it shows that global capitalism was built through social relations as well as technical systems. In conclusion, Standardizing Empire is best suited for readers interested in Cold War history, U.S. empire, Korean development, military logistics, political economy, and the origins of globalization. It will be especially useful for scholars, students, and serious general readers who want to understand how military institutions shape economic life beyond weapons production. The book offers an intellectual benefit by reframing the U.S. military as a consumer, standard setter, infrastructure builder, and organizer of global production. It also offers a practical analytical benefit. It helps readers recognize how contemporary supply chains, outsourcing patterns, and labor inequalities have roots in Cold War systems of procurement and basing. Compared with many books on the military-industrial complex, Chung's work stands out because it does not focus only on arms manufacturers, Washington policy, or defense budgets. Its distinctive contribution is to examine everyday goods, logistics services, Korean corporations, and labor regimes as parts of a wider military economic order. Compared with conventional accounts of South Korea's economic miracle, it emphasizes the hidden role of U.S. military demand and infrastructure. But Thesis 2 Enion's Past, the result is a focused and historically grounded account of how war preparation became embedded in ordinary capitalism. If you would like to support Patrick Chung, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.